session and we discuss status of negotiations with the California School Employees Association, Confidential Employees, Management Employee Council, San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, and Service Employee International Union. We also discuss student personnel, consideration of waiver of California high school exit exam requirements for students with disabilities. Do we have a consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on then to approval of the minutes. And do I hear a motion for approval of the minutes for the regular meeting of September 4th? Let's do one at a time.
I'll move that we approve the minutes.
Okay. It's been moved by Mr. Buckman. Do we have a second? Seconded by Mr. Peter. Discussion, Mrs. Dickinson.
I should have the page noted, but I like the way Dr. Valentine wrote in a summary of last meeting. He had the sentence, the board expressed support for the AR. This is regarding that supplemental materials. The board expressed support for the AR with the additional direction to encourage the creative use of supplemental materials. That's the way Dr. Valentine summarized that, and I liked that. So I wonder if we could have it worded that way. Let me get the page for you. I'm sorry. Page 4. Oh, yes. Instead of the last sentence, it was a consensus of the board not to make further changes to the administrative regulation. I think this is more accurate, really. The board expressed support for the AR with the additional direction to encourage the creative use of supplemental materials.
I would support the sentence, the consensus of the board not to make further changes to the AR, but I would also support that we encourage the creative use of supplemental materials because we did discuss that considerably. But I think we would have to have approval of the person that made the motion. And also I see Mr. Millar and Mr. Peter.
I don't want to change the existing sentence just because I think it does reflect what the board says. And of course we encourage the creative use of materials. Are we going to encourage the uncreative use of materials? You know, I don't know.
Well, it better be noted because a board might not. I object to the word consensus, actually, because that implies 100% approval of everybody.
Because that is what I said.
So, okay, Mrs. Roger, did you catch that, Kim?
Okay. I'm waiting for a specific direction about what you'd like these minutes to say.
I have a question.
Okay. And Mark has the motion. Mrs. Roger, could you tell us again what you're thinking and just give me a sentence?
Well, Adrian, would you say aloud again what you would like?
This is a sentence that I think covers what you're talking about because I remember your comment specifically. And Dr. Valentine actually wrote this sentence in his summary. The board expressed support for the AR with the additional direction to encourage the creative use of supplemental materials.
I would be willing to accept that as a change to the minutes. That's fine with me.
And so Mr. Buckman has accepted that as a change. And Dave, is
sure.
That okay? Okay, so we have a motion that's been amended. Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
It carries 7-0. Let's move on then to staff recognition. Oh, you're right. We got another minutes to. I was rushing ahead, and that would be the minutes of the special board meeting of September 11th. Do we hear? Do I have a motion?
I make a motion to approve those minutes.
Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Moved by Mr. Spadafore and seconded by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
I was not present.
6-0. 6 with one abstention. That's why I wanted to separate that out, Mr. Millar. Thank you. I'm trying. Let's move on then to staff recognition, the mayor's task force, Mrs. Kirk Martinez.
Good evening, board. Is this on? I would like to introduce to you Jane DiVincenzi and Carol Stein. On August 16th, Carol and Jane were awarded the Adult Volunteer of the Year by the San Luis Obispo Mayor's Youth Task Force. The San Luis Obispo Mayor's Youth Task Force is the San Luis Obispo Youth Coalition and part of the Prevention Alliance. Jane and Carol were recognized for the many years of work they have done with the youth in the San Luis Obispo High School special day classes for the emotion. Was recognized for the help they provide for these youths to learn and grow both educationally and emotionally. This award was originally presented by three members of the Board of Supervisors, as well as a representative from the Assembly Blakeslee's office, Lois Capps, as well as Senator Maldonado, and all of the mayors in the county. Wow. And you can see four of the five plaques are represented here tonight. So please help me in congratulating these fine women.
I just want to say what an honor it is to work for this district. These are challenging times that we work in. The children we serve deserve all the help that we can muster up. And receiving this honor was really, really touching to us. We had no idea it was coming. In fact, I was in China when my husband emailed me to tell me that we'd been nominated. Carol, I think, was in Yosemite. And so we didn't even know we had been nominated for this award. So it just sort of came out of the blue. And so we were quite caught off guard. So it was really an honor. And I am thrilled that we're here to share it with you tonight.
I would like to agree with everything Jane said, and I'd also just like to thank the board and all the administrators in our district, and especially at San Luis Obispo High School. I feel we've been extremely supported with a very challenging population, and we certainly couldn't do it without the team effort that we have. So thank you for doing your jobs.
Thank you.
And on behalf of the board, I would just like to say that we're honored to have you teaching for us and serving the children of our community, and thank you very much. Okay, let's move on then to staff recognition. And this is Mr. Jones, principal of San Luis High School.
Good evening, everyone. Will Jones, principal of San Luis Obispo High School. And I think by any measure or by any definition, we would all agree that last year was an outstanding year or excellent year for our students in the district, and they do with heartfelt seriousness and dedication. And so I think that makes this honor for Anna Bates even more significant. Anna, who I'm going to bring up here in just a second, has been teaching at San Luis Obispo High School for, I think this is her sixth year now, since 2002. She came on board as my first year as principal, so proud to say that I had the opportunity to hire her, and she's made me look good over the last few years. Anna teaches agricultural science, physical science. She also teaches ag leadership. This year she's teaching ROP, small animal, and next year it'll be large animal, and that kind of flip-flops back and forth in a variety of other classes in agriculture. She's also the livestock coach for FFA and takes all the students to the fair in the summertime and dedicates countless hours to that. She's the FFA advisor, and she also does something that I think is somewhat unique in our district or in education, and that is that Anna makes personal home visits to all of her students every year who are involved in her classes and who are participating in FFA to make that important connection between teachers and students and parents. So it's an honor and a pleasure for me to be able to present to you Anna Bates, who is the California Agriculture Young Teacher of the Year for the state of California. Anna Bates.
A
I'll turn over the microphone in a second to Anna. Accompanying Anna tonight is Caitlin Lewis, who is one of our fine agriculture students and all-around great student at SLO High School. And together they're going to talk a little bit also about our fair results this summer. So, Anna, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. I didn't know he was going to talk about me that long. And I'm sorry we came in late today, but I now know where every school in Los Osos is. But thank you for the honor of being here. I feel like I've been recognized for this award for quite a while, and I keep telling him to stop talking about it. But it was great, and I'm really glad that it is not just me. It is all the people in my department that work together for this, for our FFA and our chapter. So that's why I'm like, there's many people that are involved with this award. So I'm going to let Caitlin tell you some things that have been happening briefly about the Ag Department.
This summer, San Luis Obispo High School had many kids that participated at the fair showing beef, sheep, pigs, and we had a lot of success. And those class winners go into a final round for the breed, and then it goes into FFA, and then overall champion. So there's just many different things you can win, but we are lucky to have a lot of successes. And also the Mid-State Fair is just a lot of fun. We wake up every morning between 5:30 and 6, depending on what animal you're showing. And our teachers are there with us, and it's a lot of fun, everything you get to do. And then also, this October, it will be the 80th National FFA Leadership Conference in Indianapolis, Indiana. And there's 38 students selected from the state of California to go as delegates. And I will be lucky enough to serve as a delegate this year in Indianapolis with our state FFA officers from this year and last year. And that will be a lot of fun, so hopefully you'll get to hear about that. It'll be a week, and we'll be voting on different issues for the national FFA organization, as well as seeing our new national officers be elected. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And again, just congratulations. One of the things that I think the board recognizes, and I would just note that some flowers have been given as well to Anna. Thank you, Val. That, as we all know, and we need to remember, that agriculture is the number one industry in San Luis Obispo County, and I think we need to honor our heritage, our agricultural heritage here, and this is one way that we can honor it and continue it. So thank you very much.
Can I say one
question? Yes, please.
I guess high school students are too sophisticated to get emotionally attached to the animals they're raising for the fair. I don't know. But if you have a sheep or a pig, I mean, you could still might get attached. But if you're raising beef, you know, it's kind of hard to get too attached to that. Showing beef. I mean, that's interesting terminology, isn't it? And that's what they call it, isn't it?
I just wanted to thank you also, because I think what Will described is something that's so exceptional relative to teachers is the commitment to their students and the relationship that's created that years from now a student will say, I can't tell you how much it meant for the teacher who did this or the teacher who came to my home. So those things mean so much, so it's very appreciated.
Thank you. And let's move on then to student recognition, Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo High Schools. Mr. Jones and Mr. Zotovich.
Wouldn't mind taking a second and thanking Karen for all the work she does. Tonight I have the honor of being able to present to you a teacher, Jan Fetcho, and her student, Spencer Van Hoos. Spencer won the bronze medal at the Skills USA competition in Kansas City this summer. I'll have them come up in a second, say a couple of things about them. First of all, regarding Spencer, you know that before you get to win a bronze medal at the national level, you have to be a state champion. And so we don't want to forget that preceded this success that he had in Kansas City. Spencer is a senior at SLO High School, and I'll tell you a little bit of I'll tell you the classes he takes, and that'll tell you something about Spencer. This year he's taking AP
calculus. He's taking physics. He's in virtual enterprise, programming 3, Latin 2, government English, and for fun, he takes freehand drawing 1 as well. He's an outstanding student, and he has an ACT and SAT score that all of us would envy, myself included, although they didn't have ACT back when I was in high school. But he's a great student and a wonderful representative of our school. Jan Fecho, again, is another one of those teachers who just can do anything and everything. She's our site tech, and this year has really helped us out with our changeover to PowerSchool, our new database. She's our webmaster. She teaches all of our programming classes, our web page design class, computer tech class, our computer networking classes, AP computer science, and computer systems management. So please join me in congratulating and welcoming Spencer and Jan. Jan Fecho, Spencer Van Hoos.
I would like to thank you for the support that you've always shown to career tech classes through all the years when you supported keeping the computer applications classes in both high schools, and how you have always supported me when I've come and presented new classes to you. And you're always willing to listen and always willing to, across the board, just we have more career tech classes than most of the high schools out there. Thank you so much.
I would like to thank the school board for giving me the opportunity to represent San Luis Obispo High School at the Schools USA National Competition.
That we've had you going to Kansas City. We had a Jason Dornish from Morro Bay High School to go to Kansas City last year. We've had some tremendous success there, and I think that just goes to show what a great bunch of students and teachers we have in this district. Mr. Zotovich.
Thank you very much for this honor tonight to spotlight some of our fabulous students that we have. At both high schools, the students that you're seeing tonight in Skills USA are just the tip of the iceberg of probably 40 or 50 kids that participated. Many of them went to the state and did very well. But in the state, only a given number of kids in certain categories were allowed to go on to the nationals. And at this time, I'd like to introduce our state winners. And I'm going to do that through our teacher, Liz Moore. Liz is a very, very accomplished teacher. She teaches at our school three very, very popular classes in photography. She also teaches art. And she teaches a couple of classes in web page design and other web page media issues that are in that same class. And her classes are very, very full. She's been in our school in 3 years, and she's really, really built the program. So at this point in time, I would like to introduce Liz Moore. Liz?
Well, I'd like to thank the board and Mr. Zotovich and, of course, Mr. Rapucci for getting us on our way to Skills USA. Don Rapucci paved the way for us, and I had not gone before, so he did everything to help us get there. These are our web design team, Jenny Gosnell and Tyler Horgan. Web design is a team competition. Jenny is the designer and Tyler was the coder. They won locally, regionally, and represented the state of California to go to Kansas City, Missouri. And it was a pleasure to travel with them. Skills USA is kind of a teaching contest, so the judges try to teach while the kids are competing, and their judge was Bill Collifer, who was the founder of the World of Webmasters, setting standards across the nation. He said the group of the 30 students that competed were top-notch. He was so positive and excited about the field of web design and all the possibilities that these kids would have. What else to tell you about him? Oh, Jenny now is our webmaster for our school. Student webmaster for Morro Bay High School, so Morro Bay High has a website that's run by the students.
Thank you so much, Ms. Moore, and Mr. Zotovich, and all you guys. Thank you.
Does your business have a website? This would be a great time to plug it.
I know, not yet. We're working on it.
It's pretty cool to think that that you guys have a business that arose out of your experiences in school and that you've been really successful at it. You know, years ago, people would be successful when they were throwing newspapers and knocking on doors collecting, and here you guys are on the cutting edge of things. So congratulations.
Next, I'd like to introduce Don Rapucci. While, as Liz said, he really started the Skills USA at Morrilby High School, and he took quite a few kids, and they did very well this year. But some of the students that won in certain categories in the state, they didn't have the national competition. So he did very, very well with that. But tonight, Don's here to talk about how well his kids did at the Mid-State Fair in drafting and other media things that they did there. Don is a very accomplished teacher, but I need for you to know that he's in one of those rare areas that he teaches five different things, but within those five different things, he probably teaches about 16 different preps. You know, so Don teaches drafting, welding, metals. You don't do auto, but all kinds of programming 1, 2, and 3, computer tech, computer web, computer this, computer that. Don has got a multitude of preps that Don does. So today Don is going to come up and introduce his students at the Mid-State Fair that were competing in drafting. Don?
Well, like Jan said, thank you for all the support in this field of computers and technology, especially in the industrial side of technology. The wave in the next few years, you're seeing that there is a major need in these areas, and it's great that we're being able to address that both at the high school level and at the junior college level. So please continue with that support. But these two guys and two other gentlemen that I'll mention in a second have stand out strongly in the Mid-State Fair competition. Now, in Mid-State Fair, next summer when you have a chance, go to the Mid-State Fair, go around the corner, and go over to the livestock, because that's where they put it. But next to the livestock is one of the most fantastic shows you can see, everything from welding, woodworking, drafting, rope work, agriculture, because it's also an agriculture competition involved. Well, we competed this year in drafting, and Morro Bay has been very successful for the last 9 years taking the top awards in drafting. And this year I have 4 students that have taken awards in first place in different categories. Gordon Kirby and Chris Koppel, who are not here right now. Chris just graduated, and he was top in the computer-aided drafting field. And Gordon Kirby, a freshman at the time, is one of the first place winners in category 1. The other two people, Nathan and Bryce, are both winners in mechanical drafting in their field, both first place winners in different categories, different levels. Wonderful job, guys.
Just a little shy. What's the right?
I'm sorry. They had to bring them in. We got these are beginning drafting concepts. That's computer aided. That's board work with the pencil work. You make a mistake with that, you got to start all over again. And then one more of the board work.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Unfortunately, a few months ago when we set this meeting up, because of the situation that happened with our FFA, they've had to change the Tuesday meetings. So they are actually a large group of them tonight. About 70 kids are meeting, along with their Boosters Club, which just had a very, very successful barn dance fundraiser for the FFA. I think they made over $12,000 at the barn dance. It was really something. It was fun to attend. It was on a ranch outside of Cayucas. It was really a great night. So tonight, presenting our FFA awards at this year's Mid-State Fair is Henry Waterworth. Henry's a graduate of Morrilby High School. He's here to represent them, to talk to you about how the students did. And he also presented this year, and I hope he talks about what he did. And he's going to present our students. So, Henry, it's all yours.
Hello, my name is Henry Waterworth. I was last year's Chapter Sentinel. and I've had taken market hogs for the past 3 years. Morro Bay had 33 students compete with 35 animals at this year.
Whoa.
This year's fair. Our members competed in 4 different species, sheep, goats, hogs, and beef cattle, as well as industrial arts. In the market goat division, Logan Kennedy took first place in his weight class with his boar goat. In market lamb, Alex Mode MacArthur won reserve grand champion Suffolk Slam in the FFA division. In market hog show, Brandon Colombo took first place in his weight class with his crossbred gilt. In the beef show, Danny Reese took first place in his weight class with his black steer. Leanne Michelle also received a $500 scholarship from the fair for her involvement in showing with Morro Bay FFA. In the industrial arts division, we had 4 people take first place in small project using ropes, and that was Tom Hernai, Gardner Kennedy, Kimmy White, and Wes Shortridge. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Zoe, you know, and I just want to say thanks a lot to you guys, too, and I echo my comments about agriculture. And I think a lot of folks don't realize that ag is a big business in the Morro Bay, not necessarily Los Osos, but Morro Bay, Los Osos, Cayucas, and that whole area. And we have a real strong FFA chapter there, and he's not here, I know they're breeding, but John Bates, Savage Bates, who has talked to us a lot before, has really dedicated a lot of time as a volunteer, and we thank everybody that's been involved in that.
Once again, Morro Bay High School would like to thank the board for its fabulous support. Not only is Morro Bay recognized as a very, very strong academic school, but as you can see, we have a very strong CTE program that is very, very successful, and we wouldn't have it if it didn't have your support. So once again, thank you very much.
All right, then I think that's it. Let's move on to correspondence. The board did not receive any correspondence at the time of the publishing of the agenda. Let's move on then to public comment. Do we have anybody from the public who would like to address the board at this time? Mr. Bedrigian, you can come on up first, followed by Mr. Perez. Mr. Perez, are you going to come up first? Okay. Mr. Perez?
Hi, I'm Charlie Perez. I teach at Los Osos Middle School. I teach home ec and English. And I kind of wanted to respond to Ms. Dickinson, who sent me a little note regarding the fact that tonight you are going to be addressing standards adoption, number 10 on the agenda. And, you know, that gets into curriculum and assessment and all those things that have been somewhat challenging recently. And to answer her question, you know, how does the board address that if they have concerns, I have absolutely no idea. But the pendulum doesn't swing randomly. It takes pressure from somewhere to make a change. And we're educators, you know, we're part of an educational institution. And so I'd say where we start is education. Where we've had big changes in U.S. history in the past with women's suffrage, with civil rights, with the growing peace movement, is when we've had some system based on false premises and people have noticed and have gotten out and educated others, and then we have some activism and things change. When people ask me, as you know, gosh, how's teaching going? When you say I teach middle school, they all say, ah. But people regularly do say in the grocery store or wherever else, how's it going? And kind of my policy the last year or two has been to first of all, point out just the absolute magic of my kids. I've just got incredible students every day I get to work with, and great coworkers to work with, and a really supportive administration. And then I point out that we have a fatally flawed thinking behind No Child Left Behind, behind the way we're assessing students and the way we're assessing schools. And it's all because it's based on false premises about the nature of learning and the nature of humanity. So I would say how to do with that. Well, your board members. You know, somebody has to run into you in the grocery store and say, gosh, how's that thankless volunteer job you spend hours doing? And I'd say, same thing, you know, go for the positive. These are the great things that happen because we're doing all this hard work. And then point out the problems. And I think together, you know, we can do some education, which will roll into becoming activism, and maybe we can get on that pendulum and push it over some direction that we, as an institution, feel might be more healthy for kids. So, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Charlie. Mr. Bedrigian.
Bruce Bedrigian, President of the Teachers Association. I want to thank Mr. Perry-S for his comments, because this is a nice segue into what I'm about to say. I've been directed by the site reps and by the executive board of the Teachers Association, who are concerned about the curriculum. And as far as West Ed and the benchmark tests, now West Ed, the name went away, but the benchmark tests are continuing, and teachers want to know what is happening. The executive board put together an extensive survey. We shared the results of that survey with the school board, and I've been directed from the executive board, by the executive board, to ask for a response from the school board. We put that in the end of last year. We have not received a response, and we'd like to know what you thought about that survey. And so that was one of the concerns that we had. We think there's too much testing going on. We think it's detrimental to our students, and we'd like to get back to teaching, more learning, less testing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bedrigian. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to address the board at this time? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to take a recess myself, and the board will continue on with item number one, the discussion of AB 602 funding for special education. Mr. Spadafore.
We're going to take about a 2-minute break while we shift seats here.
Can we make it?
I get 1 minute. Move
faster. Go ahead.
We haven't been.
So the meeting's resumed, and we are going to discuss AB 602 funding for special education. And this is Dr. Valentine.
I'll start off, and we'll turn this item over to other folks in a minute. But there are a few things I wanted to share before we get into the details of the discussion tonight. We want to provide the board with whatever amount of information brings you to a comfort level to make a decision. At the same time, we don't want to make this more complicated than it is, and I just wanted to make a few points before we jump into it in a little more depth. Let's talk about quality for a moment. We take no issue with our colleagues at the County Office of Education. And we will welcome the COE staff who come with any approved transfer that might happen. That said, the students we're bringing back are our students. We've always had the responsibility to see that they get the best education possible. The ability to build programs, train staff, supervise delivery, and respond quickly and individually to changing circumstances adds up to a stronger program for our kids. Let's talk about liability for a second. We're required to provide a free and appropriate public education, or FAPE, for every child who has an IEP. If someone believes that we don't provide FAPE, then we must defend whatever we did provide. Whether we provide FAPE ourselves or whether we contract out for somebody else to provide it, we have to defend it. We believe that having control over the program we must defend is better than not having control over the program we must defend. Let's talk about money for a moment. We believe we can provide the services at less expense to the district. The reason is that we have existing infrastructure at sites in terms of administration, clerical, and custodial, which will no longer require duplicate services from the county office or anyone else on the same campuses. Even though we pay more for individual personnel than the COE, we believe that the overall savings will compensate for that. And we'll give you some cost scenarios tonight. But it's important to note that even if there were no savings, the benefits of program quality and defensibility would move our recommendation forward. Let's talk about staffing. The most likely scenario is that we will be required to transfer the teacher and instructional aides that went with each class. If that happens, then the students will experience no out-of-the-normal staffing changes. If the county office needed to institute layoffs instead of a direct transfer of specific staff, we will be able and, in fact, are required to place those individuals in our program. For any vacant, non-filled positions which remain, we will compete for personnel. We believe our salary schedule will be an asset in recruiting, and we feel we are in as strong a position as anyone to recruit and supervise necessary staff. Let's talk about location for a second. With the possible exception of the Chris Jesperson Preschool, we anticipate no immediate change of location for the programs we have requested to be transferred. It is likely that neither the teacher nor the classroom location will change for the students and families we serve. Let's talk about problems. We assume there will be. Qualified special education staff are hard to find, specifically speech and language specialists, nursing support, adaptive physical education teachers, occupational therapists, and so on are difficult and sometimes even impossible to find. They will continue to be so. Rick will share these types of staffing as a somewhat unknown as we go through this process. Our take, however, is that we are in as good a position as anyone to recruit difficult-to-find staff. And furthermore, we believe it is better for us to direct the solutions to our problems than to rely on others perhaps less directly affected by the problem and perhaps answerable to more people than just ourselves. Let's talk about changes. Whatever we share with you tonight is based upon a moment in time which will change and may have already changed. A shift in students, the departure of a key staff person, a highly specialized IEP, a legal decision, a business decision can change our estimates of what many things in an instant. The constant in all of this is that whatever would change for us would have changed for the county office or anyone else. We need to be responsive to change in the future. As staff, we cannot be reluctant to bring forward future recommendations which involve cost and staffing different than what we share in the particular snapshot tonight. We suspect we will. But if we do bring forward such recommendations when we must, please know that whoever was running the program would have had to make the same or similar adjustment, and that we would have had to pay for that. Let's talk about decisions to be made. We believe that the preschool program at Chris Jesperson raises questions. That's one of the five programs. We want to keep working on that. We mentioned that the majority of the proposed programs will likely not move if transferred to us. Chris Jesperson's preschool is in a good location for mainstreaming. We'd like to keep it there for that reason. We do not have an administrator assigned either full or part-time to that site, however. If we move the program to one of our campuses, we gain access to existing administration, but the mainstreaming issue becomes more complicated. We believe the dilemma is solvable, but we are working on it. With that just kind of background and backdrop, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Russell Miller and to Rick Robinette to go into some specifics and be available for the board's questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rodentine. The AB 602 funding model and the changes it represents within our special ed program have been a topic of discussion for a number of years. The current rendition that has led to an agreement amongst all school districts has been 2.5, almost 3 years in the making. It's been a topic of monthly, quarterly meetings for that long in that period of time. The actual discussion of special ed and how to have the county presented and administer and function within the concept of what was legal and what was necessary has actually been a topic of conversation amongst superintendents and staff members for longer than that. It's been an item of concern from the days when we had to cut $10 million and our special ed costs were going up. And the superintendent was wondering, you know, on the aspect of these costs going up, how are we cutting and why isn't that happening also? So the topic of discussion has been many, many years in the making. And it has been through a lot of effort and work on many people's parts. But it's been a joint effort of all 10 districts in the county that we've come to the point that this AB 602 funding model has started to take shape. The aspect of what the board's going to be asked to decide is related to Ed Code and the necessity to give the county a decision on your part about the taking back of certain classes and programs within the county office. And that's regulated by Ed Code. We have a model, and the discussions about that model continue to evolve and take place. As we go to the detail aspects of invoking this model, we find that cost and personnel and program are very detailed type discussions that we need to be aware of. Tonight, after several weeks of meetings, either with the county office personnel or other districts within our county, we have gained new insights. And I'm certain that we will gain more new insights before our next meeting. Rick, as an example, will have a personnel meeting, I think, tomorrow, which will have certain specific topics to be discussed. I engaged in a discussion about facilities. We own some facilities that the county office is operating in. They own facilities on our campuses that we lease it to them on a long-term land lease for a dollar, but they control the buildings because it was their money that built them. So all of those pieces and details are starting to coalesce, and we've come to some conclusions on those. Recent information that we get brings clarity, but I want to emphasize what Dr. Valentine was speaking of, and that is that information is fluid, it's subject to change, and it still remains characterized as a snapshot in time. We are taking a moment, and we are defining an issue on that moment, but when we move to tomorrow, next week, next month, that information will change somewhat. So you have to be ready for that type of information to come to you in a different format or a different defined differently at some point in the future. We have presented you with some handouts that has information about personnel matters, and Rick will come up in a moment and discuss those. I've also updated some cost numbers, and when he's done, I'll take and try and define those more clearly for you. All of the information we present is preliminary, and as I said, it will change. We assume a number of things that we know are not going to happen. We assume that the number of students will remain static. It will not. We assume that the staff currently delivering the programs for the county office will migrate to our district en masse. They will not. We assume that the published cost figures presented by the County Office of Ed for their services in the future will remain the same. They certainly will not. Well, ultimately, the only thing we can be certain of is that change will occur. And nevertheless, it is safe to assume that the change will not be of a nature to cause us any surprise, any distress, nor would it alter our recommendation of an outcome. While cost and potential savings are important, the really important issues for our students, our program, and the ability to present defensible data should the need arise in a litigious matter. And at this time, I ask Rick to come up and talk about his personnel issues.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I'm kind of referring to an attachment I have to the board item here, and I'm just kind of sort of read through it and then be available to answer questions to the best of my ability anyway. Most of the personnel implications involved in the transfer or reorganization of programs between districts, or in this case a county and a district, are largely governed by education code and whatever plan is developed in a joint memorandum between the agencies. And so this is, we don't have to create how this is going to work in some sort of a vacuum. Education code largely dictates how this takes place. And just as the district, if we were to transfer programs, assumes responsibility for those students and for those students' IEPs, in most cases what we're trying to do is have those same teachers and those same paraeducators go with those students. I mean, that's what they're used to, that's what the families are used to, and so when things are working ideally, it is a program transfer of those involved as opposed to just a takeover of the students involved. And so there are several steps that we're undertaking at this point in preparation for the potential of transfer programs. And one is that we have a joint committee between the various districts that are considering program transfer and the County Office of Education. This is for just strictly personnel. I'm sure there are other meetings taking place for other aspects of the transfer. We've had a couple meetings. We have one this Thursday. And the purpose of that is to be able to review the potential employees that are involved, their seniority, their salary status, determine issues that might have to do with job descriptions that might need to be revised, both classified and certificated, and come up with joint understandings and agreements between the agencies. We will also be involving, and in fact we have a meeting tomorrow afternoon, our district does, and the county I'm sure will have if they haven't, with the employee association. So we'll be having a meeting tomorrow, a first meeting with CSEA and SLCTA to kind of just talk through the issues, make sure that there's open communication in terms of our collective bargaining agreement, any changes in the collective bargaining agreements of potential employees coming over to us. And the good news, probably from a teachers association or CSEA perspective, is the Ed Code was largely written by CTA, so it's very employee friendly in terms of the transfer. Once the board makes a decision about what programs we transfer, if any, then kind of the real work begins. And at that point, again, when things are working ideally, we would be offering positions to the teachers and the paraeducators and the SKIAs that work in those classrooms to literally resign from their county position and assume a position, a contract with the school district. And under Ed Code, they would transfer their seniority with them, which means they would be placed on the salary schedule as if they were always our employee. They would assume our contract. They would assume our working conditions. And in most cases, and I'm not 100% aware of the working condition and contracts of the county, but it seems to be in most cases a favorable move. And so, you know, we're hoping that's the way it will operate. Now, of course, an employee doesn't have to resign from the county. They could say, no, I don't want to resign from the county. I don't want to come over to the district. And then the county then would have some decisions to make in terms of their collective bargaining agreements, what the transfer rights are within their organization, or the need to execute a layoff. If the county had to execute a layoff, we would be a party in that layoff. In other words, we would have some responsibility for accepting employees that have been laid off from the county according to their seniority, provided they have the proper credentials and the authorizations to teach those classes. So it would be much the same way as a layoff would be in effect in our own district. We would have some responsibility for a period of time, 24 or 39 months, depending on the status of the employee, to rehire people into our school district. And in my study of several county and districts throughout the state that have done the reorganization, layoffs do occur. They don't typically occur for these program transfers initially, though, because the idea is just to bring the staff over. Either way, in most circumstances, county employees are guaranteed some job security within the districts or within their own county for continued employment. But again, things don't always work ideally, so it's just kind of we take one step at a time. There are obviously individual circumstances that will need to be considered, such as those involving credential authorizations, temporary teachers. Both the county and our school district operates a merit system for classified employees, so we need to make sure our personnel commissions respectively are on board with all the transfer issues that take place. And what is unknown at this time, and something we need to do some more work on, it'll be part of our task this Thursday, is for lack of a better term, the adjunct services and the DIS services that go with these students. We assume that every one of these classes has administrative support, clerical support, but also, very importantly, they have nurses that attend the classes, provide services, speech and language pathologists, psychologists. And so we will have to be making some decisions jointly about which of those services come to us. We assume administratively our principals will take responsibility and our student services department for the administrative oversight of these programs. We assume that our school sites will be able to handle the clerical custodial functions. But in terms of things like psychologists, nursing services, speech and language, we know we're going to have to either take employees from the county, contract with the county, hire our own, and so those are the kinds of issues that will need to be worked out. DIS services, which are things like adaptive PE and Braille and mobility and occupational therapy, those services we contract with the county currently for a number of our students not in county programs, and we would assume we would continue contracting for those services. The whole process strikes me as very humane, and it's intended to transfer the students, the teachers, and the aides together so the least disruption occurs for these students. And I'm available to answer any questions unless you want to continue. Why don't we and come back?
Well, we have wait just one question. Do you want to wait? Okay.
We may be able to answer some questions by continuing on, but ultimately you'll have your chance. Thank you, Mr. Buckman. I would like to now direct your attention to page 1.7, which is the last page in your binder. And what Mr. Robinette's been able to do in this schedule is to take the actual teacher in each position. We have Jesperson, which is a preschool teacher. We have four SH, severely handicapped special day class teachers identified at Slo High, two at C.L. Smith, one at Los Osos Middle School, and then there are some additional services down there. Those four teachers have an identified County Office of Ed cost in one of the columns. It's the fourth column over. In the fifth column, you will see a San Luis Coastal Unified School District year-for-year credit for experience and seniority. We have determined, at least at this moment, and we expect this to be the truth, that column will represent the salary of those teachers when they transfer into our district. We were unsure when this schedule was made, and we actually prepared two other alternatives, but we've now ruled those out, and we're going to present the cost of those teachers to our programs as reflected in this column. So a $39,000 teacher will come to us for $41,000. A $56,000 teacher will come to us for $65,000. A $54,000 teacher will come to us for $61,000. A $31,000 teacher will come to us for $38,000. And a $73,000 teacher will come to us for $83,000. So having clarified that schedule, I would now direct your attention back to page 1.4. On the schedule of costs, there are two programs there, the preschool program and then the severely handicapped SDC program. We are able to identify the specific cost to us of the teacher in that preschool program. In the SH-SDC classes, what we have taken is an average of the four teachers because of the uncertainties that Mr. Robinette talks about in terms of whether we're going to be absorbing teachers that choose to transfer with their program or are coming to us because of a layoff that takes place at the county, we're uncertain of what the actual cost will be. So I chose to use an average. Now you will see that the county office piece on this teacher, that is their menu that they're going to charge us for that teacher in that program. Even though their cost is $39,000, they charge us on their menu for $71,000. That's the business aspect of the model that has been developed. They will be able to choose whatever they want to assign a cost to, and then we look at their assigned cost and say, you know, in a cost-effective manner, then what makes sense to us on a dollars and cents basis. And so I've given to you that the county office menu for the preschool class will have a $209,000 price tag, which will be for about 10 kids. Okay, so the population of the class will vary from time to time, but on an average, they like to try and maintain about 10 kids in that classroom. For our 10 kids, under our program, it'll cost us $148,000. The absolute fundamental difference there, disregarding salary for a moment, is that we don't need to pay for administration. And Jesperson is an unusual event we'll talk about in a moment. But at the severely handicapped SDC, where the four locations are within one of our current elementary or middle school or high schools, our administration is already in place. There's no reason to assume that one additional or two additional classrooms is going to cause us to have to add more administration. We also, through our desire to put into place additional bus drivers, developed a service worker, bus driver service worker category that we will be able to put into effect in terms of custodial. So any additional custodial impact to the site won't fall on our current custodian. We will be able to mitigate that effect by assigning service workers to take up the slack on that. Those are the two obvious differences between their menu and our costs in terms of the fiscal impact. We're also assigning a different FTE or full-time equivalent to each of these categories, or not in each case, but in some cases, like a psychologist, the county assigns a 0.23. Our special ed department has determined that a 0.28 would be more in keeping with what we would want to accomplish in that classroom. And the same thing applies in the SHSDC class. That was a preschool. This would be the SHSDC. So staffing and costs are related in this particular schedule. One of the things we talked about was snapshot in time. Thank you. And something has already changed, and that is that there is a classroom at Los Osos Middle School that when this schedule was developed, we developed it under the assumption there was four kids and a couple of aides, and now there are seven kids and a couple of more aides there. So there is a developing situation that happens with each one of these classrooms that could change in a week depending on how many kids are enrolled and what their particular needs are within the program. The page 1.5 is the County Office of Ed's published at this moment menu of costs for each of the classrooms. They have as their main block model a $190,000. Find it at the top of the page. And then they have add-ons or entrees you could add to the menu for additional costs. And you can see what those are depending on the category and the type of class that they're running. I think that brings to the conclusion those aspects of the cost and other things related to special ed. As we move forward with this, it's just absolutely important to understand that our driving interest is really to be able to take and identify our children and provide for them the best program we possibly can. And we feel our children, our program, presents our best interests in this particular case.
So questions back to, thank you very much, Mr. Buckman. Mark?
Yeah. Russell and Rick, thank you. This is exactly what we were looking for from the last meeting, and I appreciate it. In reviewing the item on the top of 1.3, item 7, it's my understanding that we need to sign a letter of 1 year and a day this October, and item 7 talks about a large unresolved issue, mm-hmm. and it's a little scary to me, and I'm wondering, do you think you're going to get it done in time?
Yeah. What I believe is that we're going to be making a decision that
in some ways, as we keep talking about a snapshot in time, is going to be a leap of faith in terms of our best thinking. And as I've seen these kinds of memorandums develop between counties and districts that have engaged in this before, much happens after that year and a day. I mean, it's you're making a decision whether or not we bring back programs. Then the hard work begins on how we're going to make it all work. And that's why I think even these cost estimates are at best estimates. They're even based on 06-07 numbers. They're not 07-08, and they're certainly not 08-09 when we actually take the programs. I don't know that all those issues will be worked out prior to the October 2nd meeting.
Yeah. No, the, number 7 doesn't appear to be a cost item. It appears to be how do we do it? And that's what's got me concerned is if we don't know how we're going to do it, and then we're going to sign a contract that says we're going to do it. Okay. I have another really quick question, if I can, Chairman.
Certainly.
Yes.
One other question. As we look at 1.7 and we look at the jump, I think there's going to be some teachers that are looking at this and going, I'm getting a raise. My question is, with STRS, is there any requirement on our part to somehow, every time we get we pay somebody, we pay into STRS for them,
correct,
their percent, and are we going to have to pay some kind of retro? Because when they now retire, they're going to be entitled to more money on retirement. Do we have any requirement to go retro on retirement?
Yeah, the employees, and my understanding is the employees will, it's almost as if because we're transferring seniority, we're transferring that obligation in terms of their accumulated STRS. We'll continue paying, in the case of teachers, 8%. They'll pay their 8%, and but we will be assuming seniority as if they were our employee.
But STRS is not going to ask us to say, well, now we suddenly have a more expensive retiree, so you're going to have to pay some retro money to fill our pot back up.
I wouldn't expect that, because if we transfer teachers from one district to another, you know, they're treated the same way. There are issues. I mean, we give 12 sick days as opposed to a county contract and a common contract that gives 10. We have to pay for that. And so there will be issues of accumulation of sick days and things like that that we'll have to work out. As far as the issues with DIS services and adjunct services, I think the real trick is going to be to figure out, once a decision's made, how many classes we're taking. We'll assign an FTE to it and then see what makes sense. I mean, if it ends up being a full FTE or close to a full-time FTE, if we need a full-time nurse to cover these 5 classes or these 4 classes, then it'd probably be a very easy thing to say, we want one of your nurses to transfer over here. It's those part-time pieces that I think are the tricks that are going to have to get worked out. Is it better to contract services, or is it better to, you know, no one wants to do a partial layoff of employees if they can avoid it, you know. And so they're going to be tricky. And they're going to involve other districts. Those services, you know, the service of a school psychologist might work in these classes but might work in classes in the CMR. Both of us might be vying for that same person. So some of those things are really going to have to be worked out once boards of education kind of make their decision. And I know it's frustrating to me that it's kind of unknown, but I think it will be unknown until we just kind of figure out where we're going and then start working through the problems.
Do we have a sense of how many other boards are having the same discussion?
3.
Yeah. What we know at this point is that Paso Robles, Atascadero, and the CMR are considering the taking back of preschool classes.
Okay.
So they've advanced an interest, although they haven't determined what their outcome will be. Their interest is in discussing that further. Additionally, to this 1.7, to this question about DIS services and how it'll all play out, remember this, that this is not the first county to do this, that there are many, many counties in the state that have done this before. So the models exist. Mistakes have been made. It'll be up to us to talk to the county and develop and utilize the best models out there that have already been tried and true. So I don't see this being a huge sticking point. Ultimately, it is a bit of an issue for the part-timers, but that's what we do anyway. And it would be either a big issue for us or a big issue for the county. Okay. But it's going to be an issue.
But when we talk about, you know, we're going to take this class and it's going to be humane and we're going to take the teacher with it, we actually may not. I mean, the CMR may actually take that teacher.
What we hope is that the model that works best is for the teacher in this particular class that we're taking and the aide in that class come to our district with that class. That's the least disruption. That has the best outcome for everybody. We hope the county will recognize that and be able to work its way through those issues. But there's no requirement to demand that that teacher come. And that's the wild card. We don't know how it's going to play out yet.
Okay. Did you have other comments, Russell?
That was it. Thanks. Okay.
Adrian, then David, then Walt.
When I work with my kids on scheduling, on my caseload, you know, they want to do these ambitious things like take French 1. And I'm knowing the student and disabilities, I don't think they'll be successful, but I am never, ever going to tell a student, you know, I don't think you can do it. I always let them try it, whatever it is. If they want to try it, go for it. But usually in my mind, I'm thinking, if that doesn't work out, we can put them in support, you know, and I'm thinking about what the fallback plan will be. There really is. So I'm tempted, you know, when you want to do something, go for it. That's just my nature. But there's really no fallback on this. It's like we're not going to end up giving it back to the county if it doesn't work out or how, right?
If I could respond to that, Russell Field.
Yeah, certainly.
The kinds of reasons that something would not work for us would be that we could not find a teacher with the right credential to work in that class. We could not provide the kind of aid time that was required for the IEP for that student. They are exactly the same kinds of problems that would exist if we didn't make the move. That is, that if there were no credentialed teachers to be recruited, the county would not be able to recruit that teacher or to find that aid. We're responsible for the IEP of the student in either case, so if the county were to be in a place where they didn't have a credentialed teacher or they didn't have adequate aids for the IEP, we would be responsible for not providing FAPE for that student, and we would be on the hook to defend that. If we are in a place where we can't find a credentialed teacher or can't find the aid, we are on the hook to defend why we're not providing the IEP. The only difference between those two situations is that we are in charge of the recruiting and the solution of the problem rather than being one agency removed from the solution of the problem. Now, the only thing I would put one more thing out there. The DIS, designated instructional services, which is all of those specialized services we speak of, occupational therapy and so forth, that is the one thing that it is conceivable that the county might be able to provide some of and we might not be able to. And I think all of the options there are to contract, we contract for those services now with the county in not just, for kids in county office classes, but for kids in district classes as well. We don't see any real argument for why that relationship should change because of this takeover. However, could we impose that change? Probably not. So, it is an unknown. We've characterized it as an unknown. I don't think it's a deal breaker at this point.
Then I had one more question. You know, you talk about what's best for our children, Mr. Miller, but we're expanding our notion of our children to preschool. And it looks like this model that's right here, this financial model, these numbers are based on Chris Jesperson moving sites, right?
Actually not.
No?
No.
Okay.
And it is an option. One of our uncertainties about the Jesperson issue is stay at Chris Jesperson or move to one of two elementary schools, C.L. Smith or Hawthorne. The requirement for a preschool class is that they have an inclusive regular ed preschool class to put those kids into also. And Jesperson has the state preschool at it, where they have a relationship. Hawthorne has a PEEP preschool, and C.L. Smith doesn't. And so one of our issues are if we move it to Hawthorne, we would have to bump some other program class out because they're fully impacted facility-wise. So what is our least invasive option in this particular case? We haven't settled that question, thus we don't have a solid recommendation yet about Jesperson.
But that's expanding. I mean, we've been always K-12, and this is a change, just a big change to start including preschool.
Well,
is
preschool
it mostly
is always,
because of the cost savings? Why do we want to include preschool?
Preschool's always been a special ed requirement and responsibility of the district.
We've
ages 3 to 5.
The county doesn't take care of all preschool special ed?
Yeah, they have a – that's what they've been serving is those
that's
preschool kids as a responsibility.
Right.
But it's our district – they belong to us because
right.
they live in our boundaries. So now we have a developing situation where those preschool kids, if we get them early on, we put them into our programs, we have consistency of application of that program. And we are certain of the quality and the follow-through that happens all through their K-12 and up till the age of 22, which they remain our responsibility. So from 3 to 22, we have a program model that is consistent.
Okay, because I know county has like infant programs, too, for special education.
Yes.
So they have, right, so I mean, this. It seems like they have something that's working from infant to preschool.
Pretty
that's
much.
County-wide. That we would just be taking a little piece out of instead of their whole program that kind of works already
well,
for that
our responsibility
group.
Is ages 3 to 5 at preschool up to 22
uh-huh.
When they become adults.
Okay.
David?
Yeah, thanks. I think this is our third reading of this topic. Yeah, we've had a lot of discussion, a lot of great background information. I think, Dr. Valentine, your summary was great. It provided a lot of reasons why we'd want to do this, and I support them. In my mind, the two issues that carry the most weight are, number one, control of the programs. We can provide better programs for our kids. And in turn, that helps us mitigate risk. I know even in my, I guess, to a third extent, possibly cost control or cost savings might result from the program. But even if they didn't, I think the first two issues, you know, are those that really carry the weight. The things that I'm most curious about, especially after reading the paper today and realizing that the other districts in the county are considering this and that other districts in the state have already faced this issue, is if you can give us maybe a color for sort of what the various county offices of education, what their view is on this issue, because apparently they're facing it throughout the state. And I don't know if any of your discussions with them, do they view this as a good thing or as a bad thing? Or, I mean, do they support the takeover? How do they feel about it?
Yeah, it's not so much of a takeover as it is an evolutionary process in special ed. I guess if we go back to a historical perspective on this, special ed developed as a small population best served by putting together different districts to make an effective classroom. Two children do not necessarily make an effective classroom. Certain circumstances maybe, but when you're creating a model, you want to see some interaction amongst kids, some diversity and all of those issues, but you want to have cost effectiveness also. And 10 kids was judged to be about right. So in the early days of developing program, a district the size of San Luis Coastal would have two or three identified with this particular special need. Not enough to make it a cost-effective model. Then you look at Lucia Mar, Cayucas, and Cambria. In a geographical sense, they're close to us, and they have one or two additional kids to add to the mix, and you end up with 10. Who has operational authority of that classroom? It wasn't going to necessarily be the districts, and in fact, the model chosen throughout the state of California was to develop what they call a SELPA, Special Ed Local Plan Agency, and put together an authority that oversees this on a county-wide basis mostly. There's individual districts like LA Unified that has their own SELPA, but if you look at it as a county, they're a SELPA, okay? And that's where it came from. County then developed programs. Well, in the last 5 to 6 years, there's been an explosion, if you will. There's been at least an increase in number of special ed identified children. And we now find ourselves with numbers that make it cost effective for us to do that. And that's true of all districts in the state of California, mostly. Smaller ones are an exception, but varies according to philosophy and geography, I guess, and also population types, cultures and stuff come into this. So there's differences, but the nuances are not, you know, it's not a big issue about the differences. Essentially, the district is funding the program and developing and holding on to it. There are, if you will, experts in special ed throughout the state, and Lucia Marr hired an organization called FICMET to come in and study their special ed program, and their recommendation to the Lucia Marr board was a model very similar to what we've been developing for 2.5 years in terms of full administration and collection of data and defensibility of product. And it's going to take Lucia Marr a number of years and lots of money to get there, but that's the recommendation of the specialty group. There's also a gentleman by the name of Paul Goldfinger who actually wrote many of the special ed laws and funding models that exist today, and his recommendation is a direct model, a direct-funded model. So to answer your question, this isn't really new ground as much as we're trying to cherry-pick the best ideas, put them together in a cohesive operational plan that has a built-in flexibility for us to do those things we think are the best. Under our current model, there's not a lot of flexibility for us. We do what the program that the county offers us allows us to do. We now will have flexibility to add SCIAs, paraeducators. We can put more psych time. We can put more OT time. Anything we want to do, we can do. So that's the difference.
If I can just add something to that, in studying the memorandums of a couple of other counties that have been involved, there has been some pain associated with the counties because they have had to do layoffs. And that's, no one wants to do layoffs. I mean, that's just a painful process, especially certificated layoffs. I mean, it's just a far more complex issue. And typically, county offices have healthier contracts and healthier salary schedules than their surrounding districts. That's not the case with us in particular. And so we feel like this will probably be a smoother transition than some other counties face. I can't speak for the other school districts around us, but in terms of San Luis Coastal and the County of Office of Education, our salary schedule compares very favorably, and so we would expect.
Which we have to notify the county as to when we're going to.
October 15th. What is found in Ed Code is that you must give a year and a day's notice on a planned return of program to a district. You got to give that to the county in order to give them time to plan for potential layoffs or financial implications, where it's good business practice. In this particular case, because of the decision to ratify the new AB 602 model did not happen until July 15th, the year and a day period had passed. And Dr. Crocker at the county office, superintendent of county office of ed, wrote a letter that allowed for a new date of shorter duration, and it's October 15th.
Okay, and that is the time when we have to notify which programs we're going to take on.
Yes.
But Mr. Buckman made a reference to signing a contract. We're not going to be signing contracts at that point. We're just telling them which programs we want to take. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so and I guess, and I thought what Mark was concerned about is that October 2nd to the October 15th, whether that's enough time to do the stuff that we need to do. That's not what you were worried about?
I probably misspoke about signing contracts, and I apologize. I am concerned about getting the details ironed out between now and the time that the letter needs to be submitted. And
just as
the letter does not need to have as much detail as, but it does need to know which programs we're going to take back.
Technicality, we have submitted a letter which actually met the year and a day, which said we were withdrawing five classes. What, October 15th is the last day we can rescind it.
Thank you. That's true. Yes.
David, do you have a question?
So when would we actually take over the programs then, the year after next?
Yeah,
so there would be one more full operational year.
This year, right. And then on July 1st.
08-09. Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Mark?
And then Marilyn?
I understand that we've submitted the letter, and I understand we have until October 15th to rescind. And I have to stress that my concern is that if the devil is in the details, and I'm listening to our administrators, and I'm hearing and I'm accepting, but it concerns me that not everything has been worked out yet.
To the extent that we possibly can, before you make your decision on October 2nd, we will present to you all the information we have, and hopefully it'll be enough to allay those fears and allow you to go forward with a clear mind on this.
Agencies that we have to respond to that may bring us back to the board to share a different response to this than the one we're sharing with you tonight. The only, structure or concept that may help in dealing with that is that the crisis would exist in the old model as well. And I'm going to keep coming back to that notion that the crisis would exist in the old model as well, and there would be emergency things that would happen and we would pay for them because it's subscriber paid at this point. So I guess one of the things I feel vulnerable on is at some point coming before you in special education and the response is, but you said, and so I'm trying to put in what I really said right here. And the other is, I want to, the thing that I think we should be accountable for is something that happens because we took over the program that wouldn't have happened if we didn't take over the program. That's something we should be accountable for.
Okay, just a quick question, and then Marilyn has some questions. What we're really dealing with is a concept that's been well thought out and presented, and there's been data given as much as is known to this concept, and it's a little bit like a ship sailing. And then for the next year, the crew's going to be added, and some of the direction's going to be initiated, and there'll be some more decisions made. But this is a concept that we have to feel comfortable with as a board, but the details will be filled in over the next several months.
I think it's a good analogy.
Okay, Marilyn?
Okay, well, I probably should have gone first because a lot of the things, I've got a lot of scratchings here and many have been answered. Pardon me, Mr. Mueller? I'm mindful that this is a very important issue and a big decision for us to make. And I wanted it to be more than just an agenda item in black and white. So I have spent time. I spent several hours yesterday in the county class here at Los Osos Middle School and then at C.L. Smith in both county classes and in the special day classes there because I wanted to get a sense of the student population, what the teachers are dealing with, ones that have already been answered. The curricular materials in the classes that I observed are not typical curricular materials that one might find in a regular education classroom. They are adaptive, they've been adapted to the needs of the students. And teachers who have taught in the county program for a number of years have accumulated a wealth of materials. They've taught different children of differing abilities. Who owns those materials? And how will we, what happens to those materials?
The materials are owned by the County Office of Ed. The materials were purchased with funds from each district for a specialized need for identified children belonging to those districts. So then you have a certain type of a computer that a child needs in order to be successful in the classroom. Those are purchased from funds that were put into the pot, so to speak, by all districts. So we still have to have that discussion, but ultimately I think it resides, the answer will reside with the recognition that the materials you are highlighting were purchased with our money for our children anyway, so they should follow the child just like the teacher and the aide and all the other aspects of the program.
Okay, thank you. This one was answered. This one was answered. Years of service was answered. Ratio of aides. I know, I understand that that's IEP driven.
Mostly. Sometimes, you know, if you have 10 kids in the class and it's not necessary to provide an aid per the IEP, you still would provide the aid because of the nature of the class and what you're attempting to do in that classroom. You might provide two aids.
So if you had a classroom, for example, that had 8 children and only 2 of them had an IEP that required a one-on-one aid, but the balance of the composition of the class clearly suggested that another aid was required, the county in the past has made that, they have understood that situation and made that accommodation. Is that something that we would do? The evening. Snapshot in time on projected cost savings, they may not exist. What is the driver for this? It's program excellence and control.
Correct.
So I am viewing this as the savings, while they sound, you know, better program, more control, less cost, sounds great, but I don't think that less cost, I suspect it may not be there, and I'm not so concerned about that. I don't want this to be a cost-cutting measure. I want it to be a program benefiting. You know, I want this to be driven toward the best we can do for our children rather than a potential cost savings.
Move. You know, it's a point that we go back to all the time. It's really easy to ground yourself in the facts and figures of the issue, but ultimately we always go back and ground ourselves in the reality of what we do and what that is, what is best for children. And I would say to you, my opinion, that the returning of these programs to our control gives us that flexibility to make sure that these programs are constructed for the interest of kids, our kids, according to our wishes, not by some other agency that we don't have a say-so in. Not that they didn't do a good job doing it. That's not the point.
I'm not suggesting that, no.
The point is, clearly, that we now can determine through the input of 7 individuals sitting at this table what their vision of a special ed program for this type of a need would be. And we can implement it without asking permission from anybody else.
Okay. Bear with me. I'm almost done. Okay. I just wrote, there are currently so many unknowns. If this is our desire, we will have to take a leap of faith and make a statement of our intent and trust the administration to work out the nuts and bolts, because there are just too many things that are unknown at this time and can't be known. I understand that peer educators and SKIAs will be hired as necessary based on student needs.
Correct.
But any layering of administration, I think, needs to come to the board for discussion and approval.
Always.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to just reemphasize, very confident we will be able to overcome any of those obstacles.
Okay. Well, I would encourage any of my fellow board members who have the time, and I know that everyone is busy and we're all working, but they were very receptive to my coming here to Los Osos Middle School and also to Smith. It's just good to see what is going on in these classrooms, the kinds of disabilities that children are trying to work with, and the environment that the teachers are trying to teach in. It's an eye-opener. It's very different from the special day classes that I observed last year. Much more intense, much more intensive. And it's nice to get it out of the black and white and put a personal face on it, if anybody's able to do that. Thank you. I'm done.
Thank you, Melanie.
Don't turn off your lights so quick. I have a follow-up for you.
Okay.
Back to my question about the county office perspective. When you were in the classrooms, these were classrooms where the teachers were county office employees. Mm-hmm. Did you get a feel for their view on the issue? Did you have any chance to have a discussion with the teachers about that and how they feel about this topic?
I did have some discussion. I think there's concern. Change, you know, breeds concern among most people. Not quite understanding what the driver is on it. You know, they are intimately involved with their students, intimate in a way that a classroom teacher, a regular ed classroom teacher, is not. And they feel very strongly about their students, and they. I don't think that anyone was negative, but I think that people were very positive in that they wanted to maintain these relationships. They don't want it to be damaging to the children, to, you know, change. But I didn't get that anybody was feeling like, come to San Luis Coastal, you know, hell no, why would I want to do that? I didn't get that sense. But I met briefly yesterday with Ed and Mary and Russell and Rick, and I asked why no one had come from the county to sort of put forth their case for keeping the programs, because that's surprising to me. And I was told that, well, I don't know, Ed, it's our money.
I don't think that would have been logical at that point. The other thing is that what has changed with the direct funding model is not so much that that it's mandatory that people take classes, transfer classes from the county, but rather the option to do it is there, and so the county still has the option to be chosen. And frankly, that may be of some comfort to the board, that with a certain amount of notice, if this looks out to be something that's completely untenable, we can opt back in after a certain period of time.
Any other follow-up, Marilyn? You're good?
I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, just a couple of specific questions and a couple of general questions. In terms of the change, taking over the programs, will it have any effect on the GASB 45 contributions, or will it be pro rata?
Yes, it will have a effect. We will be absorbing the individual employees' seniority, and they will have rights to extended benefits beyond employment.
For everyone else, the GASB 45 is special reserve fund for future obligations relative to retirement. Will we know that figure during the next year?
We will probably not do another actuarial report for a couple of years, but it'll be absorbed within the $11 million plus dollars. It's not going to have a dramatic impact on that $11 million, I guarantee.
Okay. Will it have any impact on our reserve amount?
Yes. Yes, it will impact the budget. There's no question about it. We are paying excess costs now to the county. It might have a positive impact, though. I'm not sure yet.
Okay. So that would be something that the board may be able to hear during the year?
Sure.
About implications for the reserve amount to plan ahead?
Absolutely.
Are you talking about the reserve for economic uncertainty?
Yes.
Well, the reserve for economic uncertainty is calculated upon the total amount of expenditures made, so it would have an impact on that. The reserve that's left over at the end of the year after we do our revenue minus expenditures could have a plus or a minus effect.
Okay, thank you.
So I was just thinking, from the board's perspective, that would be good information to have as we progress through the next year to determine how that may impact those issues. And then the other specific questions having to do with oversight.
The preschool classroom, too, within their current staffing basis. If we take back more or different medically fragile ED classes, they all have different requirements to them, which may require us to add some administrative staffing to our special ed department. We would certainly be adding those types of services, nurses, psychologists, that would be required to support those kinds of programs if we took them back.
That's more of the crew with our ship as we now leave harbor.
There you go.
For this trip.
Yeah.
A template for the next year, is there a schedule that has been developed or thought of in terms of where we want to be at any given point in time regarding staffing, regarding budgets, regarding the progress made to incorporate these five classes?
Rick, did you want to respond to that? And
In our personnel discussions, we want to be able to have our MOU developed with the SELPA and with the two agencies, the county and the district, developed in late October, so that employees can be, given their transfer rights prior to the county having to make a decision about layoff. Typically, that decision needs to be made by January in order to hit the March 15th deadline. And so our intent is to try to make all the possible employee maneuvers before the new year, in November and December, knowing that not everything will be settled then, but that's the only timeline we've given ourselves right now.
Okay, and then while you're there, Rick, are there going to be issues regarding the new staff that's going to be hired from the county or elsewhere relative to probationary status, disciplinary status, or other personnel issues that they'll bring with them, or is that something that's negotiated with the respective unions and associations?
The employees carry their current seniority, if they would come to us as a permanent employee, they would be permanent with us. If they came as a probationary employee, they would assume the next level of status that could be Probe 2. We have no obligation for temporary employees. So temporary employees would be treated just as temporary employees with us. There's no obligation for a transfer. None of the individuals involved the preschool situation could affect a temporary employee. The second part of the question, additional medical or things, they would continue to own those. We wouldn't be inheriting those, but for all intents and purposes, the employees become ours.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions, comments?
Only in closing, we will bring back to you at the next board meeting a recommendation on the five classrooms, and we will endeavor to continue to add to the detail that we bring.
Okay, thank you very much for everything in the presentation. I think we're going to take a few-minute break here because we need to recall the one member from the county who isn't with us. Objection from the board. I would move that we table that for today's meeting. Is there any objection? Mr. Buckman, you're raising your hand. Do you have an objection to that?
No, but I support his lack of objection.
Okay, so we're going to remove item number 8 and have that scheduled for another meeting. And Mary, thank you. Dr. Mutakovich, thank you for bringing that up. We're now going to item number 2, which is reports by school staff and student representatives, of which there are none. But are there any school staff who want to discuss or present anything to the board? Seeing none?
I have one thing.
Okay.
I have a confession. This is an error I made. And my son is a graduate of the Air Force Academy. And he provided me with a little phrase here that really helps me get through this moment. And it is that I'm going to fess up to a mess up, okay? And what it comes down to is that it's the Los Osos Sewer Project. And we had a number of ballots that were sent out to us as owners of 3 parcels within the sewer project area. And in reading those, I went forward and voted on them. And that was a misuse of board power. I overstepped my bounds. And it became apparent to me the other day when I was reading an email from Mr. Unger and one of our teachers at Baywood, interested in how the board was going to vote on this issue. And so I have to fess up. Now, I have been able to rectify my mistake.
Well, Russell, how did we vote on this issue?
Yes. I don't think I want to reveal that at the moment, but I was able to contact the county, and they have identified our ballots, and they're going to put them aside, and they are willing to allow us to change them on the basis of how the board is going to approach and vote on this issue.
So while you're getting set up?
How about after we do this?
Okay.
Yeah, that'll work out all right. Is this on now? Thank you. I wanted to bring up Kathy Hunter today, and I want to congratulate her on something that we all have strived for and which she's going to finally achieve, and that's her retirement, which is effective tomorrow. Now, in getting to this point, (laughter)
And getting to this point, she's been able to keep her focus, and she was in there this morning actually doing those tasks which no retiree should be asked to do. But I wanted to keep her engaged, so I kept giving her these little things to do. And she was able to do them with good humor, as is always. Some of the highlights of my 6 years with Kathy and your many years of much longer than that, I think I could characterize in about three different areas. And the first one I would bring up is our audits. And an audit is a grade report card, if you will, of the performance of the fiscal department of which Kathy heads up. And we had what was a banner, an unusual year, a number of years ago, 2 years ago now. We did not have one single audit exception in the audit. And I think our very worst year, we had one audit exception in the audit reports.
Petty cash.
Yeah, petty cash, always petty cash. But Kathy was able to put together a number of years, year after year, of exemplary audit reports, which would be characteristic of something totally unknown to me, which would be a straight-A report card. So I would like to congratulate her on that aspect and recognize her for that. In addition to that, what we're known for throughout the county, amongst many other things, but within my world, is a fiscal services department second to none. And Kathy is the leader of that fiscal services department. She is to be congratulated for that reputation. It has been earned through a lot of hard work and effort and the schooling and training of those particular members of our staff. And Kathy has done an absolutely outstanding job. If you go to any of the school sites, you go to any of our different areas of responsibility, everybody knows who Kathy Hunter is. And that's a representation of her willingness to get out, do the work, talk to the people, able to pull the buttons and push the levers. But at this point, I'd just like to recognize the 6 years that I spent with Kathy as being absolutely outstanding years, and we're going to sorely miss her services to the district. And I think she wants to say a few words. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I do want to just take a moment to thank the board and the administration for the encouragement they've given me over the years and the support I've gotten and felt as I did my job, which sometimes you feel like you're kind of out there on your own. I kind of feel like it's a good time to be leaving with a nice, healthy general fund balance and a very responsible school board and a great administration staff. And it's just been a privilege and an honor to me to be a part of San Luis Coastal. I've always been very impressed with the caliber of employees we have as I've gone through and worked with different people or been on different interview boards. And just to see the intensity, the education, and the caring that our employees have, from custodians all the way up. And I also want to take this opportunity to thank the Fiscal Services Department. They're incredibly knowledgeable. They're very committed to this district and keeping it on the up and up and keeping its reputation. And as I go on, I will always be proud to have been part of San Luis Coastal. It is a lighthouse school district. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris, can I say something? Mr. Barkman?
I have just one. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Mark. I'll do it.
Your honors, may I?
Is that your question?
Yeah, that's...
Well, this is something...
I know the answer to
that
question.
This is something for Kathy Hunter, if I can just finish that part. Thanks very much, and then we'll get out of there. Personally, I have to say that I have never felt more comfortable receiving information from anyone than the work and the data and the material you provided and the explanations and the commitment. And it's a feeling that you have knowing that you can really rely and count upon the work that you've done. Crocker, after reviewing again your work, and I think that speaks highly of how a fellow professional sees what you do, and I tell you personally how much that I'll miss you, and I'm sure we'll all miss you.
And, you know, I've been on the board now almost 7 years, Mr. Millar and I have, and you've been a great resource to the board, and I know you've always answered all the questions we've had and been able to explain it in ways that even board members can understand. So thank you, Kathy, and thanks for the fine service to the school district.
If I have just one. Thank you also, Kathy. You might be able to help on this also. Today I attended the Arts Obispo Arts and Education meeting, and the question came up about the money for arts and education, and I, because it was in and it was out and it was, can you just tell me again, is there art money in the budget, or did any survive? Or
yes, all of the money that came to us as a result of the 2006 state budget was renewed with COLA for 2007. So the visual and performing arts money that we received is all the one-time money, obviously didn't come forward, but the continuing ongoing programmatic money is still there. You know what? I don't know. 166,000. Okay.
Well, Mary's already stepped up for you, Russell.
I need somebody to lean on.
Okay. Let's move on to item number 4, summer school report. Mr. Halfman.
Good evening. I'd like to introduce our summer school principal, Kathy Ahern.
Gotta pull down for short people. Good evening. This year, we had 6 sites instead of 5. Pacheco decided to add a 3-week summer school course. So we were at C.L. Smith, Monarch Grove, Del Mar Elementary, Pacheco for K-5 intervention and enrichment. And then we were at Laguna Middle School and here at Los Osos Middle School for grades 6 through 12. And to highlight, our summer school program was very successful. We had many staff collaborating, helped us out. Another big component to summer school this year is we added busing for the first time in summer school history. And it came late, but we averaged 57 students in coast, in San Luis, and 75 students a day out here on the coast. And with more advertising, I'm sure that next year, if we get the word out, that we'll have more students riding the buses. So it was very, very successful this year, the busing.
Excellent.
We also had student aides, employees in the district had their students that worked for us this summer in the classrooms, and it was really great. Had a lot of good feedback from teachers whose students, their children were in the classrooms helping. We had over 50 Cal Poly students, Dr. Mulligan, Dr. Harris, Dr. Mulligan, David Min, Harris. Did I miss somebody? No. And Jim Miller had students that came in and they worked, they collaborated with us, and it worked out really well. We also had 615 classes, students that passed classes at the high school level, which was around 3,085 credits. And at the elementary level, we're going to show you a couple of slides. We had language arts intervention. We took the students' scholastic reading inventory test score that we got from their teachers. And we took it for grades 3, 4, and 5. And in the first column, the green is their pretest. And we then took at the end of summer school a post-test for their SRI test. And as you can see, at each of the grade levels, they increased their SRI scores. And it's really helpful. Their Lexile scores will help their teachers this year to see where their independent reading level is. So as you can see, the intervention classes along with the reading fluency lab and increased curriculum, Janet Gould helped with that as well, really helped with the students increase their reading levels and writing levels. And then in math, we had grades 2nd through 5th. We didn't have any first graders this year. You see the beginning, the math, we gave a Scott Forsman cumulative math assessment. And the first score is their pretest, and then we had a post-test comparison. And at every grade level, you can see the increased, they made increased and performance in their math abilities through lots of interventions, and they got to go into computer lab and work on math skills, and it was really very successful. All the intervention classes had aids in their classes, so, and we tried to keep them about 20-22 to 1, so it was very, very successful. So last year, board member Ms. Dickinson, you made a comment that stuck in my mind, and you said, God, did they just sit in class for 4 hours and that's all they do is math? And I went, I thought, well,
high above the chimney top, that's where you find me. Oh, somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. And the dream that you dare to, oh, why can't I? I, oh, someday wish upon a star.
Unfortunately, we didn't have an ROP video program in our summer school, and there eggs everybody else along. And it's wonderful to work with two people who are not only able to get so much done, but actually inspire by their example to get other people to get their best performance. Thank you both.
Thank you, and thanks for the entertainment this evening. That's great. Let's move on to item number 5, which is a public hearing, a determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Mrs. Delkiskamp.
Thank you. What I'd like to do is just read the main points of this item, and then step aside and allow any public testimony. Education Code Section 60119 requires that in each fiscal year, the local governing board determine that each pupil in each school in the district has sufficient textbooks, that's the first criteria, or instructional materials that are aligned to content standards, that's a second important criteria, and are consistent with the curriculum framework adopted by the state board. That's the third important criteria. The district currently meets the sufficiency requirement for K-12 mathematics, K-12 reading language arts and ELD, K-12 history social science, and 4-12 science. The district does not meet the sufficiency requirement for K-3 science. In addition, the Williams settlement further requires school districts to provide state-adopted foreign language and health texts. The district currently meets the sufficiency requirements for foreign language and health. Districts are also required under the Williams settlement to supply sufficient quantities of science lab equipment for identified grades 9-12 lab courses. The 9-12 science department chairs report that the district currently meets the sufficiency requirement for 9-12 science lab equipment. A summary of our district's plan is included in this item, and so no board action is required. We will present a resolution item at the next meeting for board approval, and this public hearing will provide public testimony for the determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials.
8 of the 30 criteria under No Child Left Behind. The two criterion were not met are our students with disabilities did not meet the 95% participation rate. They achieved a 92% rate with 32 students either having a parental exemption or took the test with modifications. Our English learners did not meet the 23% proficiency rate in English language arts. Our achievement rate was 16.5% achieving proficiency. The district will be addressing the corrective action year 3 requirement by instituting new curriculum for our English learners, providing professional development for staff, and developing our district as a professional learning community. Since this is a public hearing, no board action is required at this time. This hearing will provide public testimony on the district program improvement status year 3.
And I would just point out that this item was revised on the 18th. It's a little bit different than what we had in the book. I'll go ahead and open the public hearing on item number 6, District Program Improvement Year 3. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to address the board on this item?
Mr. Unger, I don't know if I qualify as a member of the public or not, but I just wanted to share with the board that the State Board of Education is meeting or met today to determine California's response to accountability for No Child Left Behind and program improvement status. As the board knows, we're in year 3 of program improvement status as a district, and we have one elementary school in year 5. I participated in a California Department of Education input session last spring with the 100 or so districts that are in program improvement in order to provide input on these, on the California Department of Education's recommendation to the state regarding what to do about program improvement interventions. The state staff is sharing with the state board the outcome of that meeting, one of which was to differentiate actions based on student achievement, which would certainly be something with interventions that could occur. They are as follows. Replace the local education agency personnel, remove schools from the jurisdiction of the local education agency, appoint by the state board a receiver or trustees, abolish or restructure the local education agency, authorize pupils to transfer from a school operated by the local education agency to a higher performing school, institute and fully implementing a new curriculum that's based on state standards, and deferring programmatic funds or reducing administrative funds. I go through that quickly. Only one of those actually has to go into effect. I think authorizing pupils to choose another school would certainly be an intervention that we could sustain pretty easily. The others are fairly draconian. So anyway, we're awaiting the outcome of that meeting, and we'll keep the board informed of where that goes.
I think Mrs. Dickinson first, then Mr. Spadafore.
Well, that answered my first question. When the board is dismissed and FEMA's called in, what year was that supposed to be again? Anyway, the fact that the students in with IEPs take tests with modifications is part of their IEP, so it's such a conflict. I've mentioned this before, but I want everyone to realize that the students must take tests with modifications to meet their IEPs, and then that makes us a failing district. Is the professional learning community an outgrowth of being a program improvement district?
I think professional learning communities are just an outgrowth of program improvement, whether you're in a program improvement district or not.
I thought it was just a sort of a buzzword and kind of a current concept. But it's not just directly coming out of being a program improvement.
No, it's connected with other issues as well.
You ready? I just wanted to mention that the reimplementation of No Child Left Behind is before Congress now, and there's been indications that they're looking at the issues of inadequate funding, allowing districts more flexibility regarding testing and implementation of programs, and realistic goals to determine progress, not the ones that are in existence now. So I would mention to everyone, the public, realistically.
Is there anybody else who would like to speak to this item? I'll go ahead and close the public hearing on item number six, District Program Improvement Year 3. Let's move on to item number 7, Developer Fee Waiver Request. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. At the August 14th board meeting, the staff presented a request from SunCare Foundation, Inc. to waive developer fees related to property within the district's boundaries that they are developing. The rationale for the request was that the development was for single males between the ages of 18 and 25 years who did not have children. The board heard comments from
SunCare Foundation representatives at that meeting. Staff did not provide a recommendation at the meeting, and we have since contacted our legal counsel and received his best thinking on this issue. He recommends three significant concerns related to this request from SunCare Foundation. The first, the district should have guidelines that ensure consistent and non-discriminatory, with non-discriminatory being the key word, practice related to waivers. We have actually a consistent application of a guideline, and that is we've never allowed a waiver before, so it's very consistent. Second, if circumstances warrant the waiver, then we should have specific policies that need to be developed and implemented related to waiver requests. We do not have that. Third, the district would not be able to monitor the conditions of a waiver that disallows certain uses. We just don't have an infrastructure that would allow that to happen. And fourth, should one waiver be granted, there is opportunity for other conditional waivers in the future. If each waiver required language to be inserted into the deed, the legal fees for development and placement of the language could exceed the fee amount being waived. Based upon the issues raised by our attorney and discussions over the past several weeks, staff now recommends that the board deny the SunCare Foundation request for a waiver of developer fees associated with this project.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay. Seeing none, Mr. Millar.
Thank you. You know, that's the thought that occurred to me. What's the dollar amount approximately that SunCare is seeking to have waived?
$7,500.
Yeah.
Ask that the administration come back with proposed language for board policy on developer fee request waivers. I think we, you know, Mr. Millar is, or Mr. Miller is saying that we should have that language, I believe, is what Mr. Green is saying.
I think what he's saying is if we're going to do this, then we need to have a process and a procedures in place, but I'm not sure that we should be doing it at all.
What Mr. Green was recommending, that should we entertain waivers, we need to have a specific policy because there would be a discriminatory liability should we just willy-nilly start granting or denying waivers. Since we have a consistent practice of denying waivers, then we, as long as we keep to that consistent practice, the policy doesn't necessarily have to be put in place.
You know, and also if I could, I agree with Adrian, Mark, and Walt as they made that comment, because in a way, if you waive a fee, what you're really saying is that the program of that nonprofit group is more important than the public education for our students, and I think that's a difficult position for us to stand behind. And I also believe by not having the guidelines and not saying this is a possibility, that it's clear that we treasure the money that's available and that there's not always enough money available to educate our children, so we maybe never want to go down this path.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 9, suspension and expulsion procedures. And that, Dr. Matakovich.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. The board requested that staff provide an overview of our suspension expulsion procedures. Board policies and administrative regulations are used for reference for this item. You have our policy on discipline, on suspension, expulsion, due process, as well as suspension, expulsion, due process for students with disabilities. You also have at your table a copy of our district conduct code for reference. If I might quote board policy for discipline 5144, the board desires to prepare students for responsible student behavior, effective classroom management, and parent involvement that minimizes the need for discipline. So when you look at these signs, fairness, attitude, honesty, leadership, caring, tolerance, responsibility, respect. That's the basis under which we operate as school staffs and working with our children. Staff use preventative measures and positive conflict resolution techniques whenever possible. Your board policies and regulations delineate acceptable conduct and provide a sound basis for our practices. Each school develops disciplinary rules in accordance with law to meet the school's individual needs. These site rules are consistent with your board policies. So if I may, our standard disciplinary procedures are developed in our student conduct code of behavior that's based on Ed Code and based on our discipline policy. We provide our students and parents with an annual booklet of information that delineates these procedures. Due process steps are followed when an incident occurs. For each offense, there's a consequence, ranging from a conference with a principal, an assistant principal, a dean for minor misbehavior, to suspension for major offenses, and then possibly expulsion. Students with disabilities follow procedures delineated in your policy for students with disabilities in this area. Discipline procedures for students with individualized education plans, IEPs, results in monitoring the number of days suspended, either before or not later than 10 cumulative days, to convening an IEP team meeting to conduct a manifestation determination, and to possibly implement a behavioral intervention plan. There are procedural safeguards that follow when we're dealing with students with disabilities. If the board wishes further discussion in this area, staff's prepared to go into those details. We have a variety of discipline strategies that our staff uses. We refer students for advice and counseling. We discuss or conference with parents and guardians. We provide a number of student success teams to get to the bottom of issues that students need to have addressed. We have testing for placement in programs such as reading. We agree to contracts with parents and students. We refer to district counseling services. We refer to county agencies and community service programs. We could remove a student from class. We could remove a student from attending school activities. We could refer to law enforcement. We refer to the school attendance review board for attendance issues. We have placed students on home hospital programs with a physician's request. All of these resources and the time it takes to analyze individual cases have to deal with suspendable infractions. They are based on Ed Code and on policy. The suspendable infractions involved physical injury to another person, force or violence upon another person, possession or otherwise furnishing a firearm, knife, explosive or other dangerous object, being under the influence of a controlled substance, alcoholic beverage, selling any controlled substance, alcoholic beverage, robbery, extortion, damage to school property, the list is long, stealing, possession or use of tobacco, committing an obscene act or engaging in habitual vulgarity, sale of drug paraphernalia, disrupting school activities, knowingly receiving stolen property, possession of an imitation firearm, committing a sexual assault or a sexual battery, harassed, threatened, or intimidating a student, offering, arranging to sell, or negotiating to sell SOMA, engaged in hazing, abetting or aiding the infliction or attempted affliction of physical injury on an individual, making terrorist threats, using electronic signaling devices, cheating or plagiarizing, failing to abide by the requirements of the school conduct code. All these areas our staff addresses through individual counseling and working with parents to ensure that the consequence of extortion, assault, or battery, and exceeding the maximum number of days for which a student may be expelled in any school year, which is 20. These are causes that you hear in a hearing with parents, staff, and it's a major decision that a school staff has to make and bring before you because of the code and the requirement for a mandatory recommendation. There is other statute that says causes for mandatory expulsion, which are possessing, selling, or otherwise furnishing a firearm, brandishing a knife at another person, unlawfully selling a controlled substance, or committing or attempting to commit a sexual assault. These areas are addressed in hearings with you and are required under the statute. We have your policies to follow, our disciplinary procedures for our students to follow. We have strategies to use, resources. We are held to the list of suspendable infractions, as well as the causes for mandatory recommendation for expulsion. And we hope that with this overview that we can begin to have a conversation with the school staff present tonight to assist you in answering any questions that you might have relative to our procedures. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. One of the things I noticed in reviewing all of this, all the board policies and the AARs, is that several times it mentions the staff development, and I'm assuming that that's the superintendent duty shall provide professional development and to assist the staff. And I'm wondering if we have conducted what that staff developments look like, when it was done, if it's done, in terms of training staff mm-hmm. on how to determine how to handle mm-hmm. Expellable or suspendable offenses.
Well, we have the opportunity in our principals' meetings to discuss issues that occur relative to discipline.
Develop all day. Well, actually, the morning only was on this part. Behavior plans, the new behavior plans for the IEPs. And there's a lot of things that come out of SELPA about behavior intervention and intervention training that mm-hmm. All the teachers in special education would have access to mm-hmm. that would help with behaviors and discipline.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's true.
Yes, a good point. We're going through a series right now. Jackie, would you like to speak to what we're providing our staff at this time in this area?
The beginning of the school year, we did have a half-day training in developing behavior support plans for special education staff, also invited, and will continue throughout the school year as our counselors on how to develop interventions and behavior support plans for students identified with disabilities as well as without disabilities. We also have our program specialists helping to support the staff in those behavior intervention plans. Our assistant principals and deans also. We did a cursory review with our principals at back to school retreat as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Two things I wanted to discuss and see what direction these could take if they were meaningful. One thing that would help me relative to expulsion hearings, and first I just want to express the gratitude for what the staff does in terms of a difficult situation and all the hours that go into a particular situation prior to it coming to the board, because that's evident in everything that we see and in a difficult situation. But one of the things I'm wondering about, that would be helpful. Is it possible to create a list of all the interventions, the disciplinary actions, the community service means of correction that were that are available to the school district relative to a particular student who eventually finds himself in front of the board for possible expulsion, and a mark indicating or a brief description of what actions were taken? And I felt that that would help me as a board member see relatively precisely and concisely what steps were taken, what was available. Because there are federal and state laws which actually go beyond what we have here in this booklet, that are requirements for students with IEPs, that I think it would be beneficial for the district and for the board that if there is a student with an IEP who is facing expulsion, that we have a memorandum from our attorneys who review the process up to that point where the student is now being placed before the board for possible expulsion, making sure that we haven't missed anything or that something else should be evaluated relative to federal and state law regarding the FAPE and IEP process. Those two things, I don't know how everybody else feels, but would be helpful for me.
I have a question about item. It's at the bottom of page number 16, and it's referring to the plan for a student's rehabilitation. And I'm not sure if this is out of Ed Code or not, but it talks about recommendations for improved academic performance, tutoring, special education assessments. Something that I'm wondering about is, in I believe the board has tried to stay away from this. Looking at this AR, are we suggesting that the board would recommend special education assessments? Because that strikes me as an IEP team decision, and that might not be something that the board, that it's appropriate for the board to become involved in. I'd like some feedback on that, please.
Mr. Trunger, what page are you referring to?
Page 16, 16 of 23, 9.24. At the bottom of the page, number 2.
And which part of the page?
It talks about rehabilitation. It's right at the bottom of the page. It's number 2, recommendations for improved academic performance. These are the plans for the student's rehab. And number 1 is periodic review, and number 2 says recommendations, and it lists several recommendations.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Is that an AR that we have as a district, or is this something that's part of Ed Code? Is my question. And if it's not part of Ed Code, I would suggest that this is something that we eliminate from our administrative regulations. Mrs. Dickinson?
Well, right now, who can request a special ed assessment? It could be a parent.
Absolutely.
Or a teacher.
Right.
And we're saying that maybe the school board also. That's what you're wondering about.
Yeah, I'm seeing that as an AR.
Different interventions, but I sure would like to look at some cost information before we start having a legal review of students that come before us. And rather than maybe a hard and fast rule, we rely on administration if they see difficult issues related to it, that they get an opinion in those situations rather than have a blanket rule. I don't think we see that many students with a decision that their disability is responsible or isn't, or the manifestation outcome. And the one part that's always been missing for me, and John kind of got close to it, is what happens to the student? I was just noticing the readmission after expulsion
Thank
requirements.
You.
A lot of the information that I'd love to see is apparently has to be presented to the superintendent or the designee before the student's readmitted. Among other things, is how they complied with the requirements of readmission. And because we sort of operate in the blind, we take action sometimes, as my fellow board members know, really difficult to sort of craft in response to each individual student's situation and their needs. And unless we know the student personally or have some other connection in that regard, we never really do know whether our intervention made sense, got the results we wanted, or any of those things. It's almost like an after-action report whenever you, like SWAT or police actions, you'd always have like an assessment of how it went, how the outcomes were, and were the outcomes what you were really trying to achieve. And I think that would give us an overview and a check on the effectiveness of our handling expulsions in general, but I also think it would give us a feedback on how we're responding to the individual student need.
Yeah, and I think I would agree with Mr. Millar, because I think one of the things that the board has had a very strong interest in is the rehabilitation aspect of the expulsion decision and hearing. I have a question myself. I have had contact with someone who had some concerns about what might be perceived as the fairness of deciding the
I think that would be a closed session topic related to expulsion, to a student expulsion.
And that's something that if the board had an interest that we could entertain that? Okay.
I would like to see that happen if possible.
Well, while we, another thing that caught me, my eye when I was reviewing this is the involuntary transfer to continuation school or community school. And I was wondering if we could hear from Karen one of the things that often comes up that we struggle with is there's some way we can use Pacific Beach to reach this student. And we don't want to turn Pacific Beach into where we, send students.
A repository for.
What I want to explore is maybe some feedback on is there something we can leverage with the Pacific Beach continuation model, a fine continuation school, by the way, and so that it gives us another thing we can use for intervention. I'm kind of interested in the impacts on your program and, if you get a student sent there in a different kind of way than you normally receive your students. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but go ahead. You're on the spot.
Okay. We've had students placed involuntarily to Pacific Beach, primarily through SARB. And in the discussion at SARB with the parent and the student and the other community members, we look at all of the alternatives for that student, including Pacific Beach Community School and so forth. So we do have students that will come to us through SARB and sometimes with a deferred placement to community school.
Karen, could I ask you a favor? Could you explain for the public what SARB is and what the function of SARB is, please?
Okay. SARB is the Student Attendance Review Board. It's a board that it consists of people from the community and from the school district. School representatives will bring students to SARB who have truancy problems and attendance issues, primarily, sometimes discipline issues as well, but primarily for attendance. So if it's deemed by that and recommended by that board that the student is primarily has some attendance issues and not real heavy discipline issues in a high school setting, for students that have as their goal earning a high school diploma. So we have a continuum of students ranging from students that are very credit deficient to for a variety of reasons, whether it's lack of motivation, attendance issues, moving around a lot, school's difficult, or to students that just for whatever reason need to be finished with school and move on to college or work or whatever, or tech school usually. We always are open to discussions. If we're looking at a student with expulsion and through an expulsion hearing, I think we need to look at the possibility, look at that individual student and take it on a case by case
on a case-by-case basis. We have had one student in the past that in the 2 years that I've been there that did receive a suspended expulsion and was placed at Pacific Beach High School and was extremely successful there. So I think on a case-by-case basis, with the understanding of what our resources are there and whether we can meet the individual needs of that student, we should look at it as a resource.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. There's some movement to not use the term continuation high school, and you referred to alternative. Mm-hmm. And a lot of schools like Pacific Beach, do we call it Pacific Beach Alternatives High School?
We call it Pacific Beach High School.
Right. Okay.
But we're governed under the continuation high school regulations.
Right. But the language does make a difference. And there's some students, and maybe that student that was successful, may remember that student. But sometimes we see someone who doesn't really fit well or work well, you know, in a traditional high school, and that starts a pattern of failure that ends up in bad behavior, and all they need is to be in a more appropriate setting. So the idea of alternative, I think, is a good idea to nurture instead of continuing with a little bit of the community feeling. You know, it's better. It's just an alternative because some people like a different venue, a different structure, and they blossom.
Right, and as we look at all of the students that are referred to us or any students on a case-by-case basis, we look at all of the possibilities and alternatives and try to determine what's best for them.
How many students have you had, after suspending an expulsion, come back and sit in front of you for a second hearing?
Typically,
they don't come back.
I was going to say, typically in a suspended expulsion, if they don't come back, if they mess up, they're out. Now,
okay.
I'm trying to think.
Well,
and
so the question is, how many students then have ultimately then been expelled?
You know what? I can't answer that, and that would be a question.
Yeah, it's rare.
Is it rare?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
I mean, it's the point they were raising earlier about feedback. But
I was going to say, I think we've had, in my recollection, one student, maybe two, who we've expelled, have come back, and then been readmitted, and then re-expelled, as it were. And I can think of one, maybe two, but just one. Usually we don't see them again. And I don't know if that's because, that would be another question, is are they choosing to complete their credits in community school and come back to us, and not come back to us? Are they choosing to do, you know, community school credits and then transfer those credits back to us and actually graduate at a San Luis Coastal?
Well, this gets to Walt's point about just having some feedback. It would be interesting to know what happens to these kids.
Right, and I think we as a board, and you know, I guess I'm not sure how much feedback the administration wants and the school staffs want to give us, but you know, clearly one of the things we struggle with is, again, this aspect of rehabilitation of the student. And you know, certainly when we're hearing during the proceedings, it is clear that if a recommendation is made, we take the recommendation very seriously. And I think the board, again, wants to be sure not that students aren't kicked out of school, as it were, and not provided opportunities to come back. And we recognize that not every student is going to be rehabilitated, too. I think that comes through loud and clear to us during the hearings and when reviewing the disciplinary proceedings against some of the students historically that we always do. And thinking about what John is talking about, providing you as well as ourselves with resources that will help students and help the schools, because clearly the board has an interest in maintaining safe schools. And I think that's part of the reason when we see expulsion.
Numbers were so small that you're hoping within a few years to have no expulsions or suspensions. I want to make sure that that comes across loud and clear. And again, I'm going to come back to something that Chris brought up earlier which is I think that there are some things that the board needs to discuss in closed session, and so I'm asking that we do that, that we set aside some time at the next closed session to discuss how we work as an administration and as a board together on some aspects of this process.
And Mr. Bruckman, if you can communicate with Mr. Unger or Mr. Spadafore about what specific case you want brought forward, then staff can actually prepare the item. If it's generic discussion, it's open session discussion. But if it's specific to a student, then we would like to know who that is so that we can.
It's generic, but it's going to take reference to past cases, which could expose those students to the public, and therefore, I think it needs to be done in closed session.
Okay. Again, if there's any particular background, if you could just let
Board
President know.
Chris, you touched on something that I just wanted to mention. One of the tensions that goes on when we're doing an expulsion hearing is honoring and respecting the recommendations by administration and staff. Sometimes you want to go outside after you finish making your decision and say, hey, we really appreciate what you're trying to do and what you're trying to tell us, but you know this was involved and that was involved. And one of the things that has really improved for me over the last couple of years is we used to kind of have to read between the lines to see what staff really sort of wanted to happen for the student. And now we're getting a lot more candid input from administration and what the recommendation means and why that recommendation is the way that it is. That's a big improvement. But the thing I wanted to say is I don't ever remember an expulsion hearing where the issue of doing something different than the recommendation was ever something that was easily walked past, because the recommendation from you all, and there's a lot of you sitting out there that we see regularly, is a critical component to what we have
taken out entirely, and it's now it refers to Penal Code Section 245.6. So I'd also recommend, along with Chris's recommendation for correction, that we correct that within our AR.
Just one last comment on expulsions. I remember Marilyn asked a question once about, is this someone you can work with? And I think the staff are really good at letting us know when someone it seems like incorrigible and they're just so, you know, disrespectful and disruptive that we all need a break. Or if it's someone that's done a serious offense, but you know, they're respectful and they give the impression of being someone that we could work with on interventions and support. I think that makes a big difference, and that communication is really important. But we understand sometimes it's just not going to work out, and we all need to be in a different place for a while. And there's a big difference in the attitude of the student. That's what it comes from.
Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I wanted to, continue a thought that Mr. Buckman shared regarding the size of the expulsion problem in San Luis Coastal. Probably 3,500 secondary students in San Luis Coastal in a given year, if we have a dozen hearings that come forward, that would be a significant year for us. Of that dozen, a significant number of those result in suspended expulsions, which put the student back into a San Luis Coastal environment. I think last year there were two students that were actually expelled.
I'm here. It's true, we don't engage in a lot of expulsion hearings, but they are very emotional experiences, I think, for all of us, and so they're big in our minds because we wrestle with trying to do the right thing for the student who's before us and the other students in the school. I'm not sure. I think Mrs. Lopez may have been on the freckle a little bit. We have once, yes, on a case-by-case basis, and that would really change the flavor of the discussions that we have when we're in a hearing.
In order for a student to come to Pacific Beach on an involuntary placement, they have to go through some sort of a formal group, and we have typically used SARP for that. I think when we get to the level where we're looking at expelling a student, we're looking at pretty significant discipline issues that we would have to very carefully look at prior to the expulsion hearing, and we typically work with staff from the schools to determine is that a viable alternative or not, because of the resources that we have on that small site. So I think before it could happen, there would be a lot of preliminary work and discussions that would go on before, and it would be known coming from staff that that is a possibility. I'm sure that it's not something that could just come up on a whim at the expulsion hearing. I think it's one of those things that you look at ahead of time and determine is that a viable possibility for that individual.
Thank you for clarifying that. So it's not something we can just cook up ourselves when we're discussing it.
Can I just make a
point? Thank you. Sure.
I would hope that if we had those situations, which would be not very numerous, that there would at least be a consideration of whether or not the Pacific Beach program also provides other things to the student beyond the expulsion situation, maybe helping them with credit deficiencies and graduating earlier or addressing whatever other issues they have. I wouldn't want to see PB, just as Marilyn indicated, become the place of last resort or first resort either.
Right, and I think, too, we need to understand that community schools are there, and the purpose of community schools is to help students who have had trouble in school and who do need work on their credits and perhaps do need some supervision by probation, you know. One of the things, too, that I'd like to just comment on is in thinking about what Mrs. Rogers said was just how difficult expulsions are and difficult expulsions are for the board, and we've had this discussion with Dr. Matakovich. I think at every expulsion hearing, we walk away learning something new and learning something new about the school district and our students. We don't have to do expulsion hearings. We can have an administrative panel do expulsion hearings. And we've decided as a board that we value that as painful as that experience is, that we value that experience so much that we as a school board will continue to hear expulsions. And that's why we take this so seriously, and I think that's at least why we've started this discussion. Mrs. Dickinson?
Another emotion we all are feeling, we all walk away with, is that really wishing that student well, too, we hope. Yeah, it's getting kind of late, and you know, when you ask questions is really important, the timing. I thought they put this number 10, because, you know, asking questions is not always a popular thing. So if you put a question as number 10, then you have peer pressure. Speaking of discipline, disciplining the question asker. But
I'll behave.
No, I think maybe we should discuss curriculum on another evening, though.
Yeah, I think it's important.
Would
yeah,
the
table
board,
it.
The board support
with board's permission.
Tabling this to another time? Okay. Then why don't we move on to our action consent agenda? Let me know if you want to pull an item, please. Item number 11, certificated and classified personnel items. 12, acceptance of donations. 13, disposition of surplus property. 14, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Yes. 15, approval of purchase orders. 16, approval of waiver of California high school exit exam requirements for students with disabilities. Do I have a motion?
I move that 11, 12, 15, and 16 be approved.
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Spadafore. Mr. Buckman, you're going to have to get quicker on the draw. It was seconded by Mrs. Roger.
We need to move. Yeah.
Is there any discussion on the action consent agenda items? Seeing none, all in favor of items 11, 12, 15, and 16, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye carries 7-0. Mr. Buckman, item number 13.
Item number 13 and number item 14 caught my attention. Item 13, we are disposing of a kiln, which is no longer being used, as a request to hit the Russell's on the draw here. You ready, Russell?
Right.
All right, ready. Okay. Requesting disposal. And on item 14, we are buying a kiln for
$14,000. $14,000 also has been increased by $7,000. It'll ultimately be $21,000
okay,
for
just,
that kiln.
Just rest my mind that we're not throwing away a $14,000 kiln.
No, we are disposing of a huge safety issue. It is.
It is a
piece of equipment which has lost its ability to shut itself off in the event of an overheat. So
that's a problem. I want to know, is the liquid projector a giant squirt gun or I'm reading East is East. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. Let's see. We're looking at advanced agenda items. One item that came up was a discussion of expulsions in closed session, and I would support that from Mr. Buckman.
Thank you.
Is there anything else we want to add to this? I think we've added two things by simply carrying forward the LEA plan and the curriculum standards adoption.
Dockets.
Okay. Dr. Valentine.
I'm just looking at the 10:30 time and asking you to be gentle on the future agenda.
Okay.
We're trying to put as many of the items you request as possible, but we run out of night before we run out of items.
Yeah, and we've got, I'm thinking, if the board would indulge me, that we've got quite a bit going on between now and at least the beginning of December.
I would just suggest doing it in smaller type, and we could
speaking more
talk quickly. Faster.
Yeah, you could be like the guys on the tag lines on the ads for cars.
If we do smaller type, there has to be shorter comments.
Mr. Peter?
Well, as you all know, I've announced my desire to leave the board prior to the end of the year, and I think we need to put on the future agenda at some point, you know, how we handle the transition. Or maybe, does it need to be discussed in the public forum about whether or not we appoint or how we handle that process? Okay,
yes.
So I think that needs to be on the agenda at some point.
And I think
we'll put that on October 2nd, which is our next meeting.
I think some of that depends on when you submit a letter of resignation to Dr. Crocker at the County Office of Education. I believe we have 60 days, something like that.
From that point. Okay.
The only thing I would put in, I think the board can choose how it would replace a vacancy, even if the vacancy hasn't been officialized.
Whether via election or...
Yes,
correct.
Okay.
So that needs to be discussed.
Mrs.
Does
Roger?
The board... do we have to accept Mr. Peter's letter?
There you go. I'll make a motion.
Does that require a vote?
I wish it did, because I think we'd go 6-1 on that one.
Absolutely, we would. It's really been a pleasure, Dave.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
But I'm around for a while, so
okay.
Until we get through this process.
The eulogies can wait for an hour.
Thank you. It's late.
It's late. We don't want to. But you know,
nobody has any reports.
I do.
And quickly, Mr. Buckman, and then.
I would just like to remind everybody that
school night I saw Mr. Peter over at Morro Bay High School. The band is great this year. And I had an opportunity to go to the Morro Bay High School opening football game, and the new scoreboard looks great. And we're really proud of everybody at Morro Bay, and of course Morro Bay got a big victory. The band did 50-50 that night. The band made over $800 because the winner donated it back to the band. It was really exciting. And the music boosters.
We got community donations of $60,000 plus or something.
For the scoreboard? Yeah, I don't know. I know Mr. Peter was recognized for donating to the scoreboard, and they recognized the donors. And so thank you, Dave, and thanks to everybody who donated to Morro Bay High School for that. Is there any administrator that would like to make a report? Sorry.
That's okay.
Mr. Spadafore.
Thank you. The light was too close. Two things. Chris and I met with Dr. Valentine and Dr. Matakovich to discuss the issue regarding PE credit for athletics and the waiver issue. And I just wanted to update everyone that that issue and the administration concern over the issues involved are ongoing in terms of evaluation and consideration. And the second thing is an event or an occurrence that started last year, which was three board members meeting with teachers informally to just talk about anything, is going to continue this year. And the next scheduled board teacher with three board members only, because we can't violate the Brown Act, is going to take place on October 5th, 2007 at 4:30 p.m. at my house. I'm not going to participate. I'm just going to host it so board members can sign up early to attend on October 5th if they want to do the informal discussion that started last year. October 5th, a Friday?
I believe it is. The 8th is a Monday. Is it a Tuesday?
How do you host it but not participate? Are you?
I serve drinks and go inside. I just do catering.
That's it, huh?
That's it. I can't participate in the discussion. So there's an opportunity for three board members who want to meet with teachers to informally discuss and talk about anything.
Great.